Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spire. So first off, thanks to everybody that took the little tarantula. What do we call it? Tarantula 202. It's the second version of the tarantula test. The first one we called 101 because it was really basic stuff. Number two was supposed to be more application, meaning, all right, you've learned all this information about tarantulas. Now let's give you some scenarios and see if you can apply that information to those scenarios and figure out what's wrong. So moving ahead, people seem to enjoy that, so we'll definitely do it again. It's fun. I personally find it fun to rack my brain to try to think of scenarios that I've encountered before that we could use for them, and it makes me revisit some of my husbandry. So I was sitting up an enclosure the other day for a fossorial species, and I'm loading the thing up, and I took a step back, looked at it, and I'm like, wait a minute, if this thing webs up top, I'm going to be in trouble because it's going to pull all that dirt up. There's going to be no room for it. So I actually had to check myself on that. So it's fun for me. It seems to be fun for you guys. Also, I want to thank Sharon Moorman, who pointed out that I forgot to ask one of the questions, apparently. I think it was question number 11, the one that involved the T. Sturmi. Luckily, I think I reread it at the end, but people were probably like, whoa, where did this come from? And basically what happened was I was up here doing this, and there was commotion downstairs, so I paused for a minute, and I came back and I skipped the question. I knew it was going to happen, and if it was a classroom, somebody would have raised their hand and said, yo, Moran, you forgot a question here. Unfortunately, you know, recording this at home by myself, the spiders didn't say anything. So thank you for that one. I'll have to be a little more careful next time. I am turning the first one into a YouTube video. I was thinking about re-recording the whole thing and doing it with me on the screen, but A, I don't like being on the screen that much, and B, I think I nailed what I wanted to nail in those explanations. I didn't want to have to go through all those again. The fun part about the podcast format is I don't have to worry about providing video for everything so that I can talk as long as I want. So if I want to explain stuff, I can really get in depth with it and explain it well. So what I'm doing is taking the video, I put together another montage of a bunch of pretty tarantulas in the background, and I'm putting the text up for each question. So for those who want to go through back through that one and revisit it, I'll hopefully have that one done this weekend. We'll see how it goes. I was working on it yesterday. I did a bunch of the questions, the text, and put it on, and my program froze up and I hadn't saved in a while. So I lost like 10 of the questions, and I'm like, all right, that's it. I'm done for the day. And I went and fed some spiders. It drives me nuts because it seems like I never have enough time as it is, and when something like that happens, it's a huge kick in the butt. So I will definitely get back to it later today. We'll see how it goes and try to get it done. If not, it'll go up sometime this week, but hopefully it'll offer an alternative to it, and I'll see if maybe I can post the actual questions underneath it or post a link to the questions if I can share that out for my Google Drive. We'll see how that goes, because I know some folks would probably like to print them out and just go through it like that, but I enjoy doing it. It seems like you guys enjoy doing it, so we'll definitely revisit that again in the future. Now for today's topic, I figure we'd have some fun. Again, I'm trying to do some things that kind of branch away from just the straight husbandry. I am going to be doing some husbandry stuff moving ahead. But again, I pointed this out before because I have a lot of people that'll be like, why don't you do more husbandry stuff? It's like, I tend to do that more in the videos because I can do the text, you have the visual. I don't do them as much in the podcasts, only because I see it as something that's better for more open discussion and fun topics and things that you just can't really do as a video. And when I do a husbandry video on just one species, you got to figure there's only a handful of people that either have that species and probably already have it set up already and don't really need the information, or you know, a handful of people that are interested in getting it, and then there's a lot of people that might not have any interest in it yet. So it's kind of a topic that there's not going to be as much interest for. And I'm trying to keep these as fun as possible. And not fun, but as interesting for as many people as possible. So I will continue to do them. I like doing more of the genus reviews because, again, the one thing we point out, and I point this out many, many times, husbandry for spiders is not that difficult. There are many, many similarities between species. For example, I raise all my Formictopus species the exact same way for the most part. I have a couple that may burrow a little later in their life cycles, but that's about it. So I like doing the genus reviews because you can sit there and realize, hey, I can keep these guys pretty much exactly the same no matter which species I get, because I'll often get ones, somebody will come on to say Formictopus cancerides, and they'll go, hey, thanks so much for doing this, could you please do one for Atachromatis? And then like my response is, it's the exact same thing. So I am looking to do some more genus reviews. I am starting to assemble some more collections of certain genera of tarantulas so that I can do these reviews. And so I will be doing more of those in the future. So for folks who keep asking, I have not abandoned the husbandry guide types podcasts. It's just I try to space them out more. because again, it's like I can do them in a 10-minute video. It's not going to take up a whole podcast. So today's topic, I'm trying to think of a fun way to create a title for it. My biggest issue sometimes with these podcasts is trying to find fun titles. I don't like to be exploitive. I don't like clickbaity stuff, but sometimes I like to come up with fun titles, and I had one for this, but it just was, you know, inappropriate. Let's just start off. It came to me when I was going through my website the other day, doing some edits and stuff and trying to update some stuff. And I was looking at my Tarantula Controversy series, and a lot of those I started years ago. I want to say my first Tarantula Controversies back in 2016, maybe 2015 even, so a long time ago. And the amazing part is, after all those years, these topics are still hot button topics. I'm not on Facebook all that often, although lately what I've been doing is every once in a while before bedtime, I'll click on Facebook and just kind of see what's been posted. More than not, I go to bed annoyed by something I've seen. But what I've noticed is I'm a member of several Tarantula Facebook groups. I'm not active on them. I don't post on them. I just, something will pop up and I'll be like, whoa. And I've noticed that these topics are still coming up and they're still causing these huge blowouts, these huge debates. I don't even want to call them debates, because debates imply that there are two sides that are actively and intelligently defending their argument, point, counterpoint. And usually it just devolves into name calling and just a train wreck of a thread with everybody chiming in at the end. So it just kind of blew my mind that after all these years, we're still doing this. And so this episode is more like, we're going to call it social media pitfalls. These are the things that, for the folks that have been around for a while, you're going to recognize them because you've probably seen them. I don't know, I'm not on Facebook very often, but I'm guessing they probably pop up weekly. One of these will pop up and blow up on the boards and have this huge long popcorn-like thread where you get out the popcorn and watch everybody go at each other. So for this one, we're looking at those things that you say, or the questions that you ask, or the statements that you make that incite chaos on the boards, that incite these arguments that really get nobody anywhere because they've been happening for so long. And I think I put one of my topics that was things that you say on message boards or Facebook groups when you want to piss everybody off. And I didn't want to use that in the title. So I apologize if anybody's listening with kids. But these are the topics, and they are controversial topics. And in many cases, there is no right and wrong answer. Some of these I dig in on pretty deeply, and I've been called out on it before. But again, and that's why I think I understand, but I always, please recognize that I always do try to see both sides of it. It's just sometimes it's like I look at both sides, and I'm like, this is the side I'm taking. I get your point. However, I'm going here. And I think that's where the debate aspect comes from, when people look at the other person and go, all right, I see what you're saying there. However, I still feel this way. Unfortunately, it usually turns into like, you're a poo-poo head. You're a poo-poo, like that level of immature. You're a jerk. You're an idiot. Why are you posting that stuff? It just doesn't forward the hobby any. Obviously, if you're spinning your wheels on the same issues for a decade, you're not getting anywhere with them. So I figured this would be a fun one for folks that have seen these blow up, because we can count how many times they blow up between now and the next podcast. Somebody somewhere will post one of these up, whether it be on Arachnoboards, whether it be on any of the dozens of Tarantula Facebook groups out there, Reddit, whatever you're on, you know you've seen these before. And for folks who are just getting into the hobby, hopefully this will head you off from asking about these. Because again, if it's on this list, I can tell you three things. It constantly comes up. It's like over the course of the years, I've seen it dozens of times. It usually devolves from a genuine question or discussion to a train wreck with name calling and just immaturity and just nothing getting accomplished. And then that leads into the third one. It's never going to get solved. It's just, your best bet is to, if you're really intent on finding out about these, well, we'll talk a little bit about them obviously in this podcast. So hopefully that'll satiate some of your curiosity, but it's also something you could easily Google and find a million other opinions on. And again, not to promote my own stuff, but most of these are covered in their own articles under Tarantula Controversies on Tom's Big Spiders. Those articles I'm very proud of, only because I tried to really show both sides of it. And then in the end, I kind of give what I think, and it's not right or wrong. Okay, I'm totally kidding with that. It's my opinion. Other people have differing opinions. So without any more further ado, that seemed rather redundant, but we're going to leave it in there. Number one, the topic that tends to immediately ruffle feathers, handling. You guys knew that was coming. That's probably, I didn't put these, I kind of put them in a list of ones that we all know and tried to come up with some cool ones at the end that are kind of new. There's one in particular that's been popping up quite a bit, and I didn't even realize I walked into this until somebody made a comment on my video about it. handling has been a discussion that people have argued about since the beginning of keeping. I've stressed before, and we're going to give the encapsulated versions of these. Obviously, a lot of these topics I've covered through various podcasts, articles, whatever, but I do think I need a reference point for people that maybe haven't heard of this before, just getting into the hobby. Here's the deal. I will explain it through my own perspective, and then we'll get into a little bit about why people discuss it and why it's so hotly debated. So to give some reference, when I got my first tarantulas back in like the mid-90s or so, and to be clear, I have not been a serious hobby since then. It took me many years before I started really getting into the hobby, but I did have a couple early on. And then back then, everybody handled. That was the big thing. Everybody that you saw, at least in my perspective, that was what you got a tarantula for. You didn't just get one to put it in a box and stare at it. You got it so you could hold it and show people how, you know, amazing you were because you could hold this big, giant, hairy spider. I think I've shared the story before how I think I was in, it had to be the fourth grade or so, and some animal group came in to show us different animals, and one of them brought in a tarantula, and I so desperately wanted to be the one to hold the tarantula to walk around and show everybody, and instead my friend Kelly did it because I was too scared, quite frankly. I went up, and I'm like, nope, I'm good. But it's all always been this big thing that people that get tarantulas, they want to hold them. Now, some of them, it is because they genuinely love their animals and like that contact. And I can get that to a point because I love animals myself. I have four dogs. I grew up on a farm. I love animals, love petting animals, love spending time with animals, love playing with animals that have that playful streak. I can totally get that. So a lot of folks, they get these animals, they name them, they love them just like we would a dog or a cat. And we can argue about whether that's appropriate or not another day. And in their minds, they want to be closer to this animal. So they hold it, and I can get that. And then there are the other folks. They're the ones that want to go, yo, look how cool I am. I can take this dangerous spider, and I can hold it in my hand. I can let it crawl on my face, and it crawls out of my mouth. And those are kind of the ding-dongs that we don't want in the hobby because there's no place for that. So I get where those folks are coming from. However, there's another side of it, of folks that see these guys more akin to. We always use this example, and I had somebody just argue against me with it, saying it's two different things. I totally get that, but it's one way for people who aren't into spiders to rationalize what we're thinking when we don't handle. A lot of folks compare them to exotic fish or tropical fish. When you set up a fish tank, you put your animals in it. You may love your animals. You may name them. You put the food in and they come to the top and you're like, oh, there's Stripes. There's Bonnie. I don't know what the heck good fish names are. Those were terrible. But anyway, you may love your fish, but you don't reach in, pick up Stripes or Bonnie and hold them because it's inappropriate. Now, the person argued this with me recently was like, yeah, of course it's inappropriate because they die when they're out of water. Understood. It's kind of an apples orange thing, but it's more just the concept of you can keep an animal and care for an animal and appreciate an animal without putting your hands on it or having it in your hand. So that's the reason why we compare them to fish. So there's a contingency out there that they basically say, A, the spider gets nothing out of it. And I do believe that. I do believe that the spiders, regardless of what we get out of it, the spiders don't get anything out of there. I am yet to see compelling evidence to show me that spiders, any spider can be conditioned to not only be handled, but to enjoy that handling. Do they enjoy creeping around and exploring? Perhaps. I've seen my H. chilensis doing it where they crawl out in your hand and they seem to just be, it's not so much, hey, this Tom's Big Spiders guy is awesome. I just want to cuddle with him a little bit. It's more like, oh, what's going on out here? Let me walk around in his hands and see what, you know, do some exploring. So that's an important distinction to make. And then there is the fact that a lot of folks keep old world tarantulas, and I do believe there's no point in holding old world tarantulas. If you're holding, I see people doing it, whatever, but I don't see any point in it. With old world tarantulas, these are ones that will defend themselves with fangs, and they can put quite a hurting on you. They are quite fast, and they can be more defensive. So that's one of those deals where people who keep old worlds a lot of times practice good technique with their new worlds as well. Like I've explained before, and I've had people go, you've got to be kidding me. I pretty much treat old worlds and new worlds the same. When I'm rehousing slings, I treat them exactly the same. And I've had folks come on and go, come on, don't be afraid of it. It's just a little new world. Well, no, it's not that I'm afraid of it. I'm trying not to do things that could get me into trouble with an old world species. So even if I'm rehousing my super docile Brachypelma hammeri, I'm not going to stick my hand in there and try to help her into the other enclosure because I may be inclined to do that when I'm doing a Chilobrachy species later on. It may not go the same way. So that's the two lines of thought on this. I have noticed, and I don't know, maybe it's just me because I'm not on Facebook all that much anymore, but I have noticed a lot more folks putting up the videos or the quick, you know, the little pictures of them with their tarantulas in their hands. So it seems to be coming back up where a lot more folks are handling now, and they put handle at your own risk. And I think I've discussed the whole handling at your own risk thing in the past. It's kind of funny, like, don't do this, but here I am handling. But I guess I get it. It's to kind of stave off the people that are going to jump on with the pitchforks and yelling for handling. So I don't know. It seems to be still, there's a lot of folks out there still handle. There's a lot of folks out there that don't like handling. There's a lot of folks out there that will point out that, you know, a tarantula could get injured handling. So I don't think that's ever going to go away, because people that don't handle just see it as an opportunity to get you bit, to get you haired, or to get your tarantula in a situation where it could jump, fall, or be injured. So, and then the folks that are on the other side see it as, it's my animal, I can hold it, and if I do it responsibly and carefully, there's really no risk to me or the animal. So that's going to be a debate that rages on. That's going to be one of those ones that when it pops up, you're going to get all people on both sides, and I reckon it will never, ever be solved or squashed. As long as we are keeping these animals, there will be folks debating on whether or not we should have personal physical contact with them. Now, the next one pops up all the time. It's never going to end. It's never going to end. I've been weighing in on it for years. And every once in a while, I see somebody come on and get admonished for doing this or chastised for doing this. Getting old world tarantulas as either your first tarantula or very early on in tarantula keeping. This is one that pops up all the time. This led directly, this whole topic here. And the one, I was going to do the old OBT as a beginner, but we're just going to rope OBTs right into here, because I don't honestly feel like OBTs are really any different than any other old world. I'm tired of them being basically villainized and demonized in the hobby for being these terrible creatures when they're really not, if you keep them right. But back in the day, I remember a thread on Arachnoboards where people, this poor person got tore apart for saying that they were going to get an OBT, and the people on the boards had decided this person did not have the experience for it. It got ugly, and the poor person went away without getting the information that she was looking for. And I remember that was a point where I was like, all right, we've come to a point where when you sit there and just attack people like that, all you're going to do is drive them away from the information that they desperately need. And that's when I started blogging. At the time, it was just kind of like, I figured I'd put some stuff up and maybe people would get some questions with it. And here we are now, how many years later? 8 years later, 9 years, I don't know, it's been a while. So the big issue is there are many folks out there that believe that, and we're going to shatter this myth right off the bat. I'll be clear on that. But a lot of folks out there believe that you need a certain amount of experience with more docile new world species before you jump into old worlds. Now, is that good advice? Absolutely. And I encourage most people to, when you start off, try getting your sea legs under you, so to speak, with some of the easier, more forgiving species, ones that don't, you know, again, ones that are more arid species, so you don't have to get into the all moisture dependency thing, because a lot of old worlds, you'll get into the moisture dependency thing. Try to get the hang of your rehousings, come up with how you're going to rehouse, feel comfortable during rehousings. And then once you feel comfortable with basic husbandry, you know, your rehousings, your feedings, your cleanings, all of that stuff, setting up a proper environment for your tarantula, arboreal, terrestrial, fossorial, all of that stuff. Once you got the hang of it, then move into keeping the more difficult ones. I totally agree that that makes sense. I don't agree with people saying that you should have, you know, you'll hear ones out there go, you should have at least 5 years experience with new worlds before you move into old worlds. You should have 10 years experience. You should go through the ladder system, which is a great little system where you can basically, looking at tarantulas by behaviors, you start with more docile new worlds, you work your way up to more feisty new worlds, like maybe Salmapias, and then maybe you move into getting your first old world tarantula. And it's a neat little system that works for a lot of people. And if it works for them, that's great. And I think for some people, that's what they need. But for other people, it's not so simple. I've shared before that I've been around animals my whole life. I came from the snake hobby. I was used to working with snakes. And when I got into tarantulas, the biggest obstacle I had to overcome at first was obviously I was still afraid of them. So that when you get into tarantulas and you're afraid of them, you really should usually take it slow. But I will say that as I spent more time with them, and it wasn't a whole heck of a lot of time, I really kind of flew through the hobby. I got my first old worlds very early on, had no trouble with them, got more old worlds, got into pokies very, very early. I feel like my whole life has been geared toward observing, understanding animal behavior, predicting animal behavior. And with spiders, I found that I could get that vibe very quickly of how they're going to move, how they're going to operate. And that's helped me in my rehousings all the way down from my first rehousings, which were terrible. And I'm glad they weren't taped, because they weren't nearly as good as they are now. But again, even then, I never really had any issues. They were just painfully slow because I was being extra cautious. a lot of people can jump right in. And then I always bring it to when people are like so adamant that nobody should be jumping right in with old world tarantulas, I throw out Australia. My buddies over in Australia can only keep Australian species, and guess what? They don't have new world species over there. They have Selenocosmia, Phlogius, species that are known for having really good venom, being fast, potentially defensive. That's what they have to start with. So you can't really sit there and tell everybody you should all start with New World tarantulas when there is a whole continent of folks that don't have that luxury. So again, am I saying people should jump right in with Old Worlds? No, because I can tell you I have talked many people down over the years that have jumped in with something too early and then are scared of it. We've talked about before that if there's ever a point you become scared of your animals, that's a huge problem, because when you're scared, you make mistakes. That's going to end up with the animal hurt, injured, escaped, you hurt, injured. It's just not a good situation. So there are folks in there that jump in too early. Unfortunately, when these come up on the boards, everybody immediately assumes the worst, immediately assumes this person has no idea what they're talking about. And sometimes they don't. I've been privy to one. I remember one guy on arachnid boards, and this is one of the few that I jumped into, and I regretted it later on because it went ugly. But the guy came on and obviously didn't know what he was doing at all, couldn't even keep basic tarantulas. And then he had only been in the hobby for, I want to say, a month or so. And he's like, I'm getting an OBT. I'm ready for it. But he had said many things early on that pointed to the fact that this was a bad situation. He did not have his basic husbandry down. He didn't even seem to have a basic understanding of basic logic as far as tarantula husbandry goes. And in that case, that's a lot of times what will happen is somebody will post on a Facebook group and folks will have already seen their previous posts and recognize, hey, this person is in no way, shape, or form ready for these spiders yet. And unfortunately, that does happen, where people have seen evidence that it's not like I'm just completely flash judging you because I've never heard from you before. You know, somebody brand new comes on the forum, hey guys, I'm new to tarantulas, I'm going to get an OBT. A lot of times what ends up happening is people have already, you know, had some interaction with them and have already kind of recognized this person is probably not ready for it. But even so, when it comes up, it more often than not blows up into some big popcorn fest. Let's kick back and watch all these people get angry. And it is one that is never going to go away, because I think there's always, I almost think it's like the hobby trying to self-police itself, because we don't want people getting out there, getting in over their head, getting bitten, and then giving a bad name to the hobby. We've talked about for years, all it takes is one big high-profile bite to make it to the papers, and then people are like, why are all these creepy people keeping these dangerous, venomous spiders anyway? They could kill people, and it would be a mess for the hobby. So I think a lot of it is us jumping in immediately, going, oh, back up, hold on, wait a second, you need more experience. But then let's just keep in mind that there are folks in there jumping very quickly. I've been privy to many, many people over the course of the years I've talked to that jumped in quickly. They've asked me, like, what's your advice? And I said, hey, if you think you're ready for it and you've got your basic husbandry down, go for it. And a lot of them jumped right in and had no problem whatsoever. I've even had people jump in right off the bat. I want OBTs. I love OBTs. They get OBTs and they raise them up from slings and they got adults and they do the rehousings and nothing goes wrong. So it's never going to go away. It's going to be one that repeatedly pops up. But it is one of those topics that if it pops up in a public forum or in a Facebook group, you can guess there's going to be huge arguments over it. So definitely the old world's first tees, early tees, still one of those hot button topics. Now, the next one I cover quite a bit. It's one that pops up every once in a while. And what brought it, it's funny, I almost forgot it from the list until somebody emailed me asking about, I believe I did a podcast on it or something recently. It's hybrids, tarantula hybrids. This is one that pops up quite a bit. And usually it's somebody that is getting into the hobby that doesn't know any better. And I just beat this one to death. So I'm not going to go into it in great detail. But basically what it comes down to is, there are some folks out there that find out that, hey, different species of tarantulas can mate and create hybrids. They think that's neat. They think of other animals that we breed, like ball pythons or dogs, and don't recognize that we're not talking about breeding different species together. In the case of ball pythons, it's different morphs. In the case of dogs, they are all the same species. We're just breeding different breeds. It's different. But even so, can come up with its own issues. Like when you talk about the wobble with certain species of ball pythons, when you talk about dogs with some of the issues they have with breathing, with the pushed in noses, with hip dysplasia, we do, even with that, it can cause problems. But anyway, Some folks will come out and be like, hey, why can't we do some hybrid, make some hybrid tarantulas? They love the idea of having, like, I don't know, a T. Sturmey with the colors of a GBB. And unfortunately, most of us, I can't speak for everybody in the hobby, but most of us recognize that's a terrible idea. Now, I'm going to apologize in advance because somebody commented on my YouTube channel after I did the hybrid thing. I told folks, if you ever want to get a hold of me quick, you can pick a video and comment. And they disagreed with my take on hybrid tarantulas. They said that I was very, they found me to be very close-minded on the subject. And I am. I will admittedly say I'm very close-minded, not because I haven't opened my mind out to hear other people's feedback on it, but because after hearing the other feedback, there's been nothing said to me that I found compelling enough to go, hey, you know what? Maybe it is okay. But this individual, if you're listening, I have your name written down somewhere, and I started responding to the comment, and I basically accidentally deleted it, and it was a long one, so I also wanted to do a little research before I got back, and I'm not ready for it yet, but the person basically went on and said that in, I believe it was carnivorous plants, hybrids are very common, and people sell them, and there's no issue there, and that we should open our mind in the hobby to these, and it's one of those deals where some people come in from different perspectives, and I've never encountered this before, so that's why I'm adding it into this podcast, because it is something that I've discussed that maybe in other hobbies, this isn't such a big deal. I never thought of that before, honestly. So I'm thinking somebody that might come from a hobby like carnivorous plants, where it's very commonplace, would come into tarantulas and go, what are these guys? These guys are idiots. What are they missing out on? There's so many different things you could create. You know, one of the things that the individual mentioned, I believe was he, but I'm not sure, was that with the hybrids, you can get stronger animals. And my retort to that would be like, these are animals that can live, some of these tarantulas can live 30, 40 years. I don't think we can get much stronger than that. And I would actually have thought for years that even just through keeping them in captivity, we have seen some types of, I don't want to say evolution, but we've seen these animals adapt to life in captivity and become much more hardy over the years. I also would have a hard time, you know, I have a very difficult time comparing plants to tarantulas. Not saying that I don't respect plants at all. I've actually kept some carnivorous plants before. They're amazing. But I think with tarantulas, it's a different ball game. We could go in all the arguments, but I think it comes down to the biggest issue right now, in lieu of all of this Lasiak stuff, and this will be all I'll say about this one because I don't want it to turn into a big anti-hybrid debate type podcast, but with all that's going on with Lasiak right now, with the chance that we may at some point only be able, this is actually something that can happen, only be able to buy certain species from people in our own states. That means the breeding stock is going to be very limited. That means no more pulling in slings from Europe, no more pulling slings in from different states. I don't want hybridized animals. Like if I want a Brachypelma hemorrhoi, I want to be able to get a Brachypelma hemorrhoi later on. I don't want something that's been hybridized. I think the biggest issue is that, and I don't know what it is with carnivorous plants. I don't know what it is with other types of hobbies where this is okay, but we can't sustain, at least in the US, we can't sustain the hobby with our own captive bred slings. We have to import them. If anything should ever stop us from being able to import these species, we're kind of screwed. And then we would have a situation where I don't want to be left with all hybridized pokies. I'm sorry. I don't want to have the American hobby edition of Pisolatheria vittata because a bunch of people hybridize them. I think that's what it comes down to, is wanting, we respect these animals. We respect the biodiversity of these animals. We respect that these different species come from different areas, have different things that are, you know, look differently about them, different behaviors, whatever. We don't want them blended together. So the hybrid thing comes up quite a bit. It's usually some well-meaning person that comes on and says, hey, I got a good idea. Why don't people hybridize? Or, hey, why is everybody so against it? And then it blows up. And there's always a couple people that, hey, they don't agree with the non-hybridization thing. They're like, if somebody wants to do it and sell the slings and label them, that's their business. Again, not going to get into the whole thing, but it is a very hot button topic. It is one of the few on here that I will dig in on. I don't want hybrids in the hobby. I have, by my count, I believe 3 different spiders in my collection that are likely hybridized, but there's no way to know for sure, and I can't breed them as a result, and that bothers me. I don't want hybrids. Do I love these spiders? Yeah, but never. One of them, Lazarus, my Brachypelma Baumgartney Bamey hybrid, I love her, but I originally planned on possibly pairing her, and I won't do that now because I don't want that out there. It comes down to the fact that most folks out there aren't interested in hybrids and recognize that if somebody should hybridize, it's way too easy for them to sell them as purebreds into the hobby and nobody ever knows. It's been done. And I've heard one of the arguments, well, it's already been done a million times already. So what's the big deal? Well, we don't want to keep doing it because at some point we may lose our access to European captive bred slings. Some point we may lose access in the United States to ones from other states. And then we're going to be left with these polluted gene pools. And I just think the majority of us are very dead set against that. So hybrids, not a good topic to bring up, one that tends to get very heated very quickly, and one that I don't see going away. Honestly, it's going to continue to pop up. It's not going to stop. People are going to continue to hybridize, whether it be accidentally, whether it be purposefully, and this topic will continue to come up as the hobby evolves. The next one comes up, and it's amazing. It shouldn't be a controversial topic. It shouldn't be one that has come, you know, creates debate and derision between the hobby, but it somehow does. And I actually got caught up in this twice over the last month of people arguing about scientific names. Now, those of us that use scientific names, again, we've explained it before, scientific names are good. When they change, it's good because it means there are people out there actually examining and looking at these animals that we absolutely adore. They're getting some attention. That's a good thing. I know it's annoying to have to reach for your little label maker and put a new label out there. And I know sometimes there are names that are changed that we absolutely love and we don't like the new names. I'm looking at you, Bumba Harita. I miss the Kabocla so much. But it comes down to the fact that this is a good thing, not for the advancement of the hobby. It has nothing to do with the hobby. It means that scientists and taxonomists are actually examining these creatures and learning more about the animals that are on the planet we live on. And what usually happens is when a new scientific name is put out there or something changes a name or it's redescribed, a lot of folks are like, oh, we'll reach for the label maker, here we go. And then there's always those people who go, this is why scientific names are stupid. We should keep the common names. And then there turns, then the debate starts or the arguing starts where it's like people point out that some of the common names are ridiculous. Somebody had one on Facebook the other day. It was amazing where they posted all the common names for one species for all over the world. And it was ridiculous how many different common names there were or how many names one of the actually... We talked about red-legged tarantulas and how those could be confused. If you don't put Colombian giant red leg, it could be a totally different spider. The common names are made up by people, often people that are selling the spiders. A lot of times you'll see somebody get a brand new species in and they give it. Now it's instead of, it'll be species, I don't know, species Zimbabwe. I'm just making this up. And then they'll come up with a common name, the Zimbabwe emerald giant. That's just made up. That's just one person. I've done it before. There's one out there that's circulating right now. I will tell you, I made up the common name. It was kind of a joke to see if it would stick. There's also the fire hiney. Again, one that I made up as a joke. And one of my videos, I forget where I put it on. I think it might have been the Itabune. But I've had people contact me like, hey, Tom, how's your fire hiney? And I have to pause for a second. Like, how did you know? It's the bottom line is the scientific names are there because it means that people are examining these spiders. They're constantly studying them. Yes, can it be irritating sometimes where they change it and then somebody comes back and changes it to something else? I get it, but it goes beyond the hobby. This isn't a hobby thing. This has nothing to do with us. We're just trying to, as hobbyists, be informed, I would hope, and keep up with the names of the animals that we're keeping. When folks come on and say, I refuse, I literally had somebody, I think I mentioned this not that long ago in a current podcast at some Somebody went on the old video where we figured out, and I apparently did not write this correctly because I got what they were saying, but people are still arguing me over the fact that they're two different animals. I know that. But if you remember back in the day, we had the Brachypelma smithii, and then they realized that the one that had been identified as Brachypelma smithii and that had been sold in the hobby as Brachypelma smithii for quite some time was actually Brachypelma hamorii. So they had to switch over the names. And somebody came on recently and was like, this is ridiculous. This is just scientists trying to make names for themselves. I don't care what anybody says. I'm going to keep the old name and call mine smithii because that's the name, the only name she should ever have, not realizing that it was youthless before and that it's changed names before. Bottom line, scientific names are good. They allow us a common reference when we're talking to people from overseas and other countries. I talk to people from all over the world that keep tarantulas, and sadly, some of our common names don't align. So in which case, we need to default to what is the scientific name of the species that you're talking about? Don't tell me the white knee or the, there are some strange ones out there from, well, I shouldn't say strange, no more strange than the ones we have here, but ones out there I've never heard of before, and then they tell me the species like, oh, okay, I get it now. scientific names, I believe, are very important. Can we use common names? I still use common names on stuff, partly because that a lot of folks just get into the hobby. They don't know the scientific names yet. I remember getting into the hobby trying to order things and trying to learn those scientific names so I could, you know, you'd sit there and read about this awesome striped-kneed tarantula, and then you'd be like, all right, what was it called? The Acanthoscura? Like, it was difficult learning those names. So I do think that there is a place for it. I don't think people should be chastised when they use the common names. I see that a lot, and people will come up and say the, you know, the common name, and somebody will kind of browbeat them or yell at, like, you should really learn the scientific names. I will usually come back and use the same common name, but also use the scientific name. So not to be a jerk, but so the person will have it later on. Plus, sometimes I don't know the common names. That's been a big thing. So are common names atrocious and terrible and awful, and should they be done away with? No, I think they do serve a purpose to kind of help people when they're just getting into the hobby. But do I think it's important to learn the scientific names? Yes. And do I think people sound like idiots when they change a scientific name and they come on and talk about this big conspiracy about changing the scientific names for money or whatever? Yes, I think you sound like a fool. So something that's going to continue to pop up, the scientific name thing, is never going to go away. It's going to continue to be discussed because neither of them are going away. Scientific names aren't going away and the common names are not going away. But it's like, as a hobby in general, we want to look more intelligent and informed. Scientific names are the way to go when we want to do that. So the next one is, it's always going to be a hot button topic, and it doesn't matter how many times people have success with these types of arrangements, it's going to be something that's going to create some controversy. And I'm talking about communal setups. And this is one that I see both sides of the fence. Obviously, I've set up communals and I had a lot of success with my Monolith Centropus Balfouri communal. I think a lot of folks followed those videos, followed my lead, started doing it. Are they 100%? Let's get this out of the way. No. I've had the vast majority of people that I've spoken to that have kept M. Balfouri communals, and we'll branch out in other communals in a moment, have had success with their communals. But there's always the ones where they're failed. I just talked to somebody who said he started off with 5, he's got 1. And that's going to happen. It's like with any animals, I have 4 dogs. There is always the opportunity when you bring a new dog in, there's going to be conflict, there's going to be friction. In the case of dogs, one of them might get bit, there might be a fight. Worst case scenario, you get rid of one. In the case of spiders, somebody's getting eaten. So that's obviously some really dark consequences when these do not go right. And it's because of these severe and dark consequences, you know, again, a bunch of spiders getting eaten, that folks who are opposed to them are so vehemently opposed to them. And I get it. There is always the risk that you're going to hurt the spider. And if you're one of those people that chimes in with, hey, you shouldn't handle a spider because there's always the risk that it could fall and get hurt, then if you set up a communal, once again, you are saying, all right, I'm not going to hold it. Because there's that opportunity for it to bite or bolt or fall and be killed. However, I'm going to put it in with other species of the same kind and put it in a situation where if it doesn't go well, it's going to get eaten and killed. So it kind of falls around the same place, which is, I found myself being kind of hypocritical on this before, because I remember telling somebody, yeah, you probably shouldn't handle. And then next thing you know, I'm feeding my M. balfouris, and it just clicked at that moment. Like, all right, I kind of did the same thing here. So I do get that. And when people go on and say it's a waste of a spider, the people opposed to it, some think it's unnatural, and that can be debated. Some think that it's a matter of, why risk it? Why buy 5 beautiful, healthy M. balfouri slings and put them in a situation where you may only end up with 1 beautiful, fat M. balfouri sling? I totally get it. And it's one of those ones that's tough to argue when people get on me about it. I've done several of them. I won't say I regret doing any of them, but would I do some of them again? No, I did the ones with the Pieselotheria metallicas. I think I've mentioned that, you know, they're all grown, most of them are all grown up. Now the 2 little teeny ones I'm looking at over here are now looking like young adults. The other ones are adult size now, 5 or 6 inches. I did lose one in that batch and I feel bad about it. I think it was a male, but I'm not positive. It disappeared. I didn't find it when I rehoused him. It means it got eaten. There are people out there who would kill to have just 1 P. metallica and that one got eaten. Would that have gotten eaten if I kept them separately? No, it would not. So that's on me. So that's one thing I look back on. And I think with P. metallica, especially, or any Pieselotheria communal, I do think there's probably instances in the wild where it behooves them as slings to stay around mom for a little longer than they normally would, to kind of congregate around the same area. But it seems like once they get that young adult size, things start going south in many cases. So would I do it again? No. Was I glad I tried it once? Yes. Do I feel guilty and bad about the one that I lost? Absolutely. So it's very easy for me to see both sides. As with M. Balfouri, I do think we have enough compelling evidence out there that they, at least in captivity, until somebody goes and studies them in the wild, in the natural habitat, at least in captivity, they do very well in these setups. But there's always that risk, and that's where people are always going to be against the communal setup. So this is one that's never going to go away. And recognize, if you bring up that you're creating a communal in the right place, arachnoboards, the folks on arachnoboards, notoriously against communals, and again, I'm not arguing it, but I'm just saying as it is, if you put up there, I'm trying to commute, you're not going to get very nice responses. One individual in particular, actually, I think this individual is just against having any type of joy in the world whatsoever, just the most miserable son of a gun you ever meet. But there's certain people that are going to rip you apart, so be aware of that. And if you post it on forums, I think, or our Facebook groups, I think you'll find it a little more accepting. A lot of folks are doing the M. balfouri ones now, but you'll also have folks that'll jump in with the old, you'll end up with one big fat spider, and that's a possibility. So this is one that I'm very wishy-washy on. This is one that I, again, will not go away because it's a very gray area. People that have successful communals, they don't understand what the problem is. Somebody was just, was it Tom Patterson? Somebody was just posting that they had an H. gigas communal with a bunch of adults in it. It's cool as heck. Like, the only reason I haven't tried one with the H. gigas is because they're big, big spiders, but there's one that's completely successful. So if somebody's had a successful one, they've seen that, they can see it can work, they're obviously a lot more open to doing them. However, for the people that try them, they buy five spiders, they end up with one or two and they have to separate them, or they have five and one of them gets eaten right in front of them and they separate them, they don't want to hear about it. It's a waste of life. So I get both sides of it. It'll continue to be something that's hotly debated. There'll be people on both sides of it. There'll be people like me that have done it, but also recognize that, you know, maybe it's not the best idea at times. Something that's going to continue to get a reaction when you post about it on boards or forums. Now, this last one is one that, this is actually what started this whole podcast. The whole idea came from this because I was kind of shocked where rather recently I realized this was a thing that people were arguing over this topic. And it just recently on a video, I posted something about one of my spiders and how I set it up. And the person goes, you know, you're really misleading people because there's no such thing as that. I am talking about semi-arboreal setups. Yes, semi, meaning partially arboreal setups. There, I didn't realize this was such a big deal, and it just keeps popping up. I had somebody email me recently, and they're like, yeah, just make sure you don't mention that they're semi-arboreal, or people will freak out. And then little by little, I have noticed that I've gotten these weird comments about people arguing over that, and I just kind of poo-pooed them and moving on, like, yeah, well, it's semi-arboreal. It's not full arboreal. It's not terrestrial. It's kind of in between. Here's my deal. I don't understand the opposition to this, quite frankly. I'm sure somebody will chime in and say, you know, what they think is the issue here, but here's the situation and here's how I'm going to explain it. When you're keeping tarantulas, we all break it down to like three main groups of tarantulas, three types of setups. You have, we'll start with the lowest one, fossorial. Need lots of dirt because they're going to dig and they're going to live in burrows. You have terrestrial. They're going to walk around the surface. They may use a hide. Like if you give them a piece of cork bark, they'll scuttle underneath it if the light hits them or if you come out. But most part, they're right on the surface. And then we have arboreal, which means at least in our homes, need to make that distinction there. We're going to get to that in a moment. But in our homes, it means you give them a little extra height. So we're talking a foot of height. Like some of my arboreals have a foot of height. Some of them have close to 2 feet. It's usually around there, a couple feet of height so they can get off on the ground. They sit on a piece of cork bark. They sit on a piece of cork bark round, some branches or whatever, and they can hunt from up high. Cool, right? Easy. Unfortunately, there are specimens that don't fit all three of those bills. They fall in between it. So let's take the three most popular that I've seen that people are doing semi-arboreal houses with or setups with. Let's look at C. cyneal pubescens, the GBB, the P. murinus, the OBT, and let's look at, I'm going to throw in T. ocrati, which is another one, Thrixopelma ocrati. These are three species of spiders that numerous keepers have observed that they don't necessarily want to be on the ground. Some OBTs will do a little bit of burrowing. Some will web some stuff up. Some, if you give them enough foliage, will web up the foliage and sit on top of it. GBBs, anybody that's studied where GBBs come from, a lot of them hang out in the bottom of brush. They are found off of the ground. Now, are they full arboreals? Are they going straight up trees and being 10, 15, 20 feet above the ground? No, they're not. Or even 5 or 6 feet above the ground. No, they're not. They're staying in the base of bushes and they're building their webbing in there. So those are ones that naturally in the wild are a bit off the ground. T. ocrati is another one. I used to keep them terrestrially. I noticed they always wanted to be off the ground. I give them a little extra height. So what does semi-arboreal mean? Is semi-arboreal something that we use a scientific term that comes from studying them in nature? No. So let's get that out of the way. I think that's where some people are hung up, where it's either they look at it, if you're in the wild, you're either arboreal or you're terrestrial. There's no in between, which is silly when you really think about it, because let's talk about Psilotheria species or Salmapia species or just about any of the Flamingo chylus, any of the old world, or even obviously with Salmapia, some of the new world, quote unquote, arboreal tarantulas. How do they start off? They start off almost fossorial slash terrestrial. They do some digging. They stay on the ground. They hide. They burrow. Why then are we calling them arboreal if they do that? Now, I think it comes down, obviously, I'm being silly here. But the idea behind it is we look at what they do as adults. And as adults, after they go through those stages, they usually migrate up into the trees. So they start off as slings in the bottom. They move up top. But we can't ignore that. And that confuses a lot of people when they go to set them up. It was one of our questions on our quiz, because many of these species will start off on the ground, terrestrial or even a little bit fossorial, and then they move on up. So we do look at what they do as adults, and a lot of these species do go up as adults. That's perfectly fine. But we can't ignore the fact there are some species that come from places in the wild where maybe it floods, or maybe they end up in bushes. They find other places a little bit off the ground to go, and they seem to want to use that behavior or exercise that behavior in our collections. So what type of enclosure do we give them? Well, if I tell people give them an arboreal enclosure, you could possibly end up in a situation, which I've seen before, where somebody had a GBB, a little juvenile GBB, in a 18 to 20 inch tank with some branches up there, and the thing was up top. These are not arboreal tarantulas. Let's call it as it is. They aren't really built for that. So this was a GBB way up high, sitting in the corner, wasn't getting its prey, wasn't coming down, was doing a little webbing up in the corner. That's not a proper setup. When we say semi-arboreal, we're leaving a little bit more space up top than we normally would. We may be setting it up a little differently up top. Instead of just having the cork bark laid across the bottom, when I set up a semi-arboreal enclosure, I do put a piece of cork bark on the bottom with a starter burrow. I also put a piece of cork bark leaned at an angle up the side so the spider can get off the ground a little bit. And I've seen many species of spiders use this. They're not going arboreal per se. They just like being off the ground. They like that perspective when they hunt. They like that perspective when they chill, whatever it may be. So the argue over the terminology, there's no such thing as semi-arboreal. I think, honestly, it's a term that has come out of necessity to explain some of these species of spiders we've seen that do want to come off the ground a little bit. And again, with the GBB, I want to point out, in nature, they live off the ground a bit. So anybody who wants to argue that point, you know, you're arguing a moot point there, because we have seen them off the ground. I think it's a good way to explain that. So I will continue to use it. I will continue to explain it. Anytime I use it in a video, I put a little definition. I have a little definition on the bottom that says, all right, this is a spider that likes to come off the ground a little bit. So you want to give it a little extra space. We're not saying set them up arboreally. I think that's where people get hung up on it, is they think that we're setting them up like arboreals. I have the ones I do semi-arboreal enclosures in, just to be specific, I usually use the 12 by 12 by 12 Exoterras. And that's because I can put in, you know, a few inches of substrate. I can put in that burrow, starter burrow with the cork bark over top of it if it wants to do a little digging. And I can also lean a piece of cork bark up in the corner, put some moss behind it, and give it a spot if it wants to get up off the ground. With my GBB, I put some stuff in there, almost like what I did with my M. balfouri, some structures, wood structures, so that it could get off the ground, web them all up. It likes to sit right on top of those. It's not that high off the ground. It's not going to fall and hurt itself if it should, you know, I don't know, aggressively jump at something. And the spider loves it. And for folks there are folks out there that'll notice their GBBs don't want to come off the ground. Great. I have one that used to want to be on the ground all the time. I had one that wanted it to go up. The one that wanted to go up, I gave it room to go up. The one that wanted to go down, we didn't have to worry about that so much. But to sit there and pretend like there isn't compelling evidence that some of these species do indeed like to go up a little bit and that there's nothing wrong with that is just silly. So I'm honestly not sure where the semi-arboreal thing comes from. I don't know why people are so stuck on it, but I think, obviously, we're not talking about the wild. I think there needs to be a differentiation. I think this is sometimes where people get screwed up. We're not saying semi-arboreal in the wild. People can argue that there's no such thing, whatever. We're talking about we needed something to identify these setups in our collection. So this has nothing to do with, you know, scientific study of spiders. This has to do with how do we emulate conditions in our own collections to give the spider what it would need in the wild. So I think that's what needs to be said, is this is a term that applies to the hobby only. I think I did read one argument where somebody's like, show me where there's a semi-arboreal tarantula in the wild. There's no such thing as semi-arboreal. It's something we use so that is key verbiage so folks that are setting these things up can recognize, all right, I need to give it a little more space up top. That's about it. So again, I'm sure it'll come up again, and it'll be one of those ones that people argue over continuously. I keep wading into it. Every once in a while, somebody pokes on a video because I'll mention that, and they'll be like, there's no such thing, or, oh, I'm surprised you said that. You know, you're going to wade into that. Again, until recently, I didn't even know this was a controversy, but since then, my eyes have been opened, and I've seen some of these discussions, and I've seen people go off about it, and I've seen people post, why are people saying this species is semi-arboreal? That doesn't make any sense. It's a terrestrial tarantula, and it just drives me nuts. So we are adding, that's our new one to the list of things we can all argue immaturely about is keepers, the semi-arboreal situation. Every once in a while, we got to invent something new to argue about as hobbyists. So that's going to be the last one on the list. Although I have one here with an asterisk because I've found that it causes less controversy now than it did back in the day. I think a lot of people are emulating good habits and it's not so much of an issue anymore, but it does come up eventually. I just had somebody come up and make a comment on one of my videos about it, and that's the old water dish issue where people, they get all their water from food. They get all their water from spraying, even though it evaporates in a minute, whatever. I don't need to give them a dish. It's a waste of time. The water dishes, it seems to have gotten better. I know the majority, back in the day, there would be a point where people would email me pictures of their setups, and usually the first thing I would respond, hey, I would get a water dish in there. That hasn't happened all that much lately at all. Most folks do have water dishes in there. It seems to be the majority of people have recognized that whether they can live without them or not, why would you not want them to have access to fresh water anytime they needed it? Why would you not want the security of having a moist place if it gets too, like right now with the winter time, although it's getting a little warm here, when the heat goes on, it gets super dry in the room, a lot of the spiders will gravitate to around the water dish, web up over there, hang up over there, wet up their book lungs. Why would you not want to give them that opportunity? It seems like most folks now, back several years ago, not so much. It seemed to be split kind of evenly of folks that weren't using them, that were using them. I think a lot of them emulate YouTubers out there. They see that the YouTubers don't use them. They freak out about it when people say you have to use them because they're like, well, this person doesn't use them. And look, they've only had 10 mysterious deaths in the last month. I'm sorry, that's just being mean. But there are situations where I have seen folks that, another mysterious death, and it's, a young piece of Lotharia and a absolutely bone dry cage with no water dish. And it's like, it's in a death curl because it's dehydrated. But I think more folks are emulating good people, good husbandry out there, recognizing that water dishes are very important, that are a great safety net, that again, would you want to drink out of a river with, all types of bacteria and stuff floating in it? Would you like a nice, clean, fresh bottle of nice, cold water? Like, it's like that. So not officially putting it on the list, but I do think it is one that is, it's going to pop up. You're going to always have those dissenters that come on and say you don't need them, but I do think we're in the right direction with that one. So I do have hopes that maybe someday it won't be such a big deal because the folks that speak out against water dishes or say you don't need them or they're a waste of time or that they don't have them in the wild, which is the silliest freaking thing I've ever heard in my life, hopefully those folks will be few and far between. So when these arguments come up, it'll be a bunch of people just showing pictures of their spiders drinking and no comments whatsoever. And then we'll shut them up that way. I'm sorry. That just sounds mean, but that is one that really bothers me because it's such an easy thing to do. It's any pet you've ever kept, you're giving it water. Why would we not give our arachnids water? It just blows my mind. So that will do it for this one. That's what I've got, a list of 7. I'm sure they will pop up again. I'm sure there's probably active threads on different forums or Facebook groups or Reddit or whatever going right now with people arguing about this stuff. I put it out there only so that new folks, perhaps you'll recognize these are topics that there's enough information on that if you just do your research, you will get all the points of view you would ever want. There's this really cool website called Tom's Big Spiders that has a bunch of articles. I'm just kidding, but I do cover and try to cover both pros and cons so people can make their own informed decisions. And then for those of us who know better, maybe we stop engaging or we just simply put, here's my thought, moving on, and we don't turn them into these big popcorn threads where everybody's just sitting around waiting for it to blow up because that gets us nowhere and just makes us kind of look foolish as hobbyists. So that will do it for this one. Again, I'm hoping to get that Tarantula 101 test video up on YouTube. We'll see how it goes. I'm going to be completely honest. It is a beautiful day outside. I have some transfer feeding to do. I'm going to walk my dogs. We'll see how it goes. Being stuck up here doing editing videos, it's not looking too good right now, but we'll see how it goes. Maybe I'll get it out midweek. But for those who want to recheck that out again, it's the same thing. It's the same podcast. It's just got the added text to it. So nothing, if you already heard the podcast, probably no interest to you. You can find me at thomasbigspiders.com. You can find me on YouTube. You can find me sitting here in my house playing with spiders in a minute. Guys, that'll do it for this one. As always, take care of yourselves. We'll catch you all next time.